All right, today is April 18th, Thursday. It is 7:15 Eastern Daylight Time. And this is a session 3 of 4 called Two Elective Paths. All right, Daniel, take it over.
Okay, well, it's an important session. When you start to review where this is going, it may take you down, you know, a path that you may not have thought you were on. There seems to be quite an evidence of, you know, theory that people are going to capture a government security. That's the sovereignty movement that's out there. But when you really look at things directly from a biblical standpoint, you start to see these things as false teachings. That they're not accurate, and they could lead people down a lot of journeys. That's why people have done UCCs, PPSAs. I don't know how many people are familiar with those terms, UCCs, PPSAs, just by a hand raise. How many people have heard those things before? It gives me a better understanding of where you're at. If you've, you know, heard these terminologies before, that would give me at least a little bit of comprehension, the audience in general, because this seems to be the ridiculousness of that system. A little bit of an ego goes with those, by the way. So it's good to know. That's great. Thank you so much, you know, for your participation on it. Not everybody has got involved in paying someone to do a PPSA, a Personal Property Security Act. I guess after you've realized that the government basically you know, assigns a person onto someone or imputes a person onto someone, and then they take that over. But when they realize, you know, the whole essence of what we've been talking about, some of this almost seems pathetically humorous. But there's people perpetrating that out there. There's people who even say there's no such thing as a legal last name or a legal birth name. Well, I'd have to go to the contrary on that when you've gone through the sessions. We've shared so much on this because it really divides what's in a name. And so then there's people that are selling UCCs. This has all got to do with the elective paths. People have chosen, unfortunately, a road to a dead end. They're trying to catch something that's not even available for them to catch. It's like trying to take over somebody's illusion, trying to take over someone's construct. If they're the ones in control of the construct and you're really not a member and you become a member of it only by your lack of knowledge, could you really control the membership? Could you really actually take over the club, so to speak? And this seems to be the energy that's out there under sovereignty patriot groups, very, very noted here in Canada. I couldn't even tell you the amount of independent Zooms and podcasts and whatnot are going on, telling people that they're just, you know, just do a little bit of this and do a little bit of that. We're going to take over the security that we don't issue. We're going to take over the machine that we don't even have access to. And we're going to take over the document that spits out of the machine. We'll just call it the birth certificate at this moment. We're going to take over that security and make it all happen. We're going to capture, you know, that security. And well, you could be in adverse possession of it just by what everybody's doing right now at the moment if they're in that system, because that's how it works. It works by adverse possession. It works by someone assuming that they have authority over a document that may have been placed into their hands, but it came from a source that's artificial, and artificial does not allow you to take over artificial. So the thought pattern somehow, I think, has a lot to do with the inner ego of actually believing that we've been maybe shanghaied, possibly taken advantage of. Usually the anger comes through first, and I have to say that the majority of people I've run into that are part of these groups of UCC filings, they're generally pretty angry, arrogant, and egotistical people. And they don't even care. They'll even charge their fellow man $4,000 or $5,000 to take weekend courses on how not to get there, but you can certainly try. And they actually have proven nothing, absolutely zero, other than getting themselves in trouble. I can tell you there have been people that have been involved in these movements that have US officials came right over the border and arrested them and took them back over to the U.S. side and put them under basically incarceration until they were prosecuted for trying to take over the person. Okay, so be careful what you're listening to, because it does have ramifications when you've got your picture and your signature consenting to be under that persona. So the one we're dealing with tonight, the two elected paths, very important. Are we going to choose God, or are we going to choose basically what is monetary gain or mammon? It's interesting when you look at the Bible, when it first talked about this in Matthew 6:24, because this should be the introductory to where we go with this. It's telling you there's only two choices. So God runs the rules. Man can think otherwise, but God is still in control. Matthew 6:24 says, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon." So you cannot divide your loyalties between the two sides. Now, even though regular, I would just say standard secular legal faiths that are out there, especially those that have promoted that they represent the teachings and doctrines of Jesus Christ, have promoted that you could do contrary to Matthew 6:24. But when we're looking at this, this is very important to look at the words in that scripture, because if we don't look at them closely, we could end up down a very, very, unhappy journey. I think the majority have kind of woke up to see that the journey hasn't been very good, especially in the last several years, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better for those who remain in the legal. But when you look up the words in Matthew 6:24, God is clearly, through his son speaking here, telling us what the situation is. So shouldn't we look up the word cannot? How many people would think that's an important word out of that scripture? Do you think that's just maybe a word we should use? Do you think it's an important word? Shouldn't we look up every word in there? Isn't every word in there important because it's spoken by those who had knowledge, especially Christ, and he laid down the foundation for us? So shouldn't we look at his words first to tell us how this all operates? So we look at the word cannot. I'm going to go to Black's Law 4. The reason we read out of this is because when you're basically occupying a position in a membership, acting in a legal capacity, then maybe we better look at the legal rules and what words that are important to look at can affect how we're operating in that legal world. So the word cannot shows up, and cannot in Black's Law 4 says denotes that one, notice it doesn't say a person, it says denotes that one is not able to do some act. Well, welcome to the Vital Statistics Act. And it creates a legal birth name or surname as a persona that someone will act under if they're going to participate in what we call public. And I hope you remember that it's very simple when we have enough knowledge out there from right in front of us, staring at us, whether it's on paper or spoken word, where things like John Q. Public will be referred to as an average taxpayer in the United States. John Q. Public, Public being the last name, publicans were tax collectors. So wouldn't it make sense that someone who's bearing a legal last birth name or surname would be a member of the public collecting and managing taxes for the legal state? Why would that surprise us? It shouldn't. It's in front of us. So when people go, "I'm not going to pay tax," there's guys that even do whole tax, basically tours. There's been guys right across Canada have, it's not basically legal to pay tax. I said, well, hold on. You have a legal last name, right? And it appears the legal regime is charging, is basically operating with that legal last name, certain rules and regulations regarding the use of it. And all of a sudden, you're going to say that something that was mainly introduced in modern times, we'll say modern, the 1200s, because we're dealing with only recent history at that point, introduced the usages of legal surnames in enrollment in birth registrations for the purposes of taxation, the census, and the draft. Now, would that make any sense that someone would tell you that it's illegal to pay tax? It's not what it is. You don't have to pay tax, but you're going to bear a tax name. Is that not pure stupid? Like, stupid is stupid. And this is the stuff that's out there. And they will go down these rabbit holes saying that you can play and not pay with that name. So don't worry about it. You're going to go into the bank and they're going to seize your bank account because you've got a name on there that gives them jurisdiction. You walked in with a legal surname, birth name to open it up. And then you think the state who issues this doesn't have authority to go in there and collect whatever they want out of that bank account? What are you, stupid? This is getting beyond stupidity. And so I hope that I ruffle the feathers of the stupid, because they're doing a lot of harm to those that they've trapped in under what appears to be basically a teaching that is going to be contrary to the reality. So they will tell you many things that are not accurate and lead you down astray, but cannot means exactly what it says here. Writing the rules on this, Christ basically put into place, said you cannot serve God and mammon. Why did he use, or why was the Greek translation using the term mammon? Well, it was mainly to emphasize it was a false god. And when you look at the whole issuance of money and the fact in the Roman Empire, they had their own god that was the goddess Juno, and where they coined their money in the Roman Empire. The Greek Empire had mammon. Many people were speaking Greek at the time, so when the translation was put out, it was appropriate to put mammon to emphasize this is a false god. It represents counterfeit, counterfeit loyalty. What is the greatest religion today that people serve? Money. It's the worldwide belief. They believe in it. It's a conviction, and they're convicted by that belief. And so they follow a false god, and they believe that something which is not occurring in nature, nothing from the creation of God, is going to serve them and do as it's told for them while they bear a worshiping title to that name. So they're worshiping the false god with a false legal tender of identity name, of which comes under the UN. The United Nations has basically declared in 2018 that every individual is issued a legal tender of identity. So they give a legal birth name so you can tender in there and play legal tender. They need a pretender to issue the legal tender. And so they sell futures on whether you're deceived and how much those basically will generate for the ones who profit from your lack of knowledge. And so this requires consent, but it also requires voluntary ignorance. And so the voluntary ignorance, unfortunately, is widespread, and most people don't want to hear it. So you go and tell someone on the Dragon's Den or the Shark Tank that's on TV that they don't have anything in reality. They're just in a make-believe system that can pull the plug on them at any given time. And I don't think you're going to be on the Shark Tank too long. Okay? They're going to throw you off there because they feed on basically the blood money of those who don't know who they are. And so these situations that we're talking about here, when we're coming to factual reality, does not basically embrace the generalized audience or population. So go tell them that money doesn't grow on trees. Go tell them that it is a fictitious concept where they've been deceived. Tell them they've made a deal with the devil. They've made a bargain, as the lawyers have. They've made a bargain. So anyways, we're going to go over to basically Peter in 2 Peter. Now, I'm quoting out of the Bible because the writers in the Bible were surrounded by the same system that you are today. Maybe a little bit more teched up, a little bit more sophisticated, but it's pretty much the same lie. And it says in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 10, it says, "Wherefore the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. Well, what happened in the Garden of Eden? Well, that was the Genesis, where Adam, through one man's sin, entered into the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all mankind. It spread, it was a virus, because he brought something into existence that was never there before. Man was made in the image of God for eternity, and all of a sudden now he's going to go from this wonderful position of peace with God in the paradise, and now he's going to go from free parking into a pay parking arrangement outside the garden. And really what the parable of all this is, what has happened to you has happened to the worldwide population that have not embraced God or his son. They've ended up out in the BC, not in the AD, where the remedy occurred, because the AD brought the relief and canceled the debt that Adam had once brought upon all mankind. But the system of legal operates as if Christ never arrived, denying his existence. So this is a very, very big learning experience, and there's no way we could explain what's going on in a proper manner without going to the Bible. There's no economist who's going to explain this. It doesn't matter where you go. You're never going to get a proper solution, because they'll never tell you the solution because they themselves have not embraced it. So they'll be just telling you, keep on believing, keep on investing. And, you know, I have seen this over the years, people that have fallen to the wayside, because when they started to believe that they could put faith in man, not faith in God, and they could find the answers outside of God's word, they were going to basically be led astray. And so the answer, when you get to the fourth session, which is going to be much more clear this coming up this next week when we talk about it, because I hope you realize I'm not mincing words on any of this at all. At first, I thought maybe I need to candy coat it a bit, keep it a little bit down. Maybe it's just too overwhelming to let people know that they really own nothing in that legal world. They've been deceived. They've been deceived by the greatest deceiver, which is Satan. And, you know, Satan is such a great deceiver that he's even got a group of people who believe that he doesn't exist and God doesn't exist, so they have no protection. So they don't believe in God, they don't believe in Satan, because to believe in God, you'd have to believe in Satan, and to believe in Satan, you'd have to believe in God. So sometimes I have an easier time talking to a Satanist than I do an atheist, because an atheist is pure stupid. You can't get any more stupid than an atheist or an agnostic, because they like to blame organized religion for why they don't believe in God. That's their problem. That means they just came upon false knowledge or false representation of what God is, and who his son is, and what the Bible is. They've gone to a lot of websites and things like that, but that, unfortunately, is their own error. You cannot make somebody not go into the worldwide web of confusion and direct them to the truth when they're determined to go everywhere and anywhere. And so it is a web out there. I had the hardest time deciding whether I'd go on the web. But then when I started to realize that most likely I would be basically, hopefully, an instrument of truth, basically through being the creation of God, not the creation of men, to put a virus up Satan's worldwide web of deceit. So hopefully this is a virus of truth, though it hasn't spread rapidly, that's for certain. It takes a while to penetrate through those very, very, I would just say, thick, scarred skulls we have of ego, because we don't like to admit that we've been basically, you know, tricked. But anyways, when we're looking at the scripture is giving us the answer. And this is literally a fall from grace. So wherefore, the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure, for if you do these things, you shall never fall. It meant you'll never fall from grace, because you've chosen the right path. So it's important for us to look at the word election. Election shows up in Noah Webster's dictionary. Chuck, if I could ask you a favor, if you could just grab me the Samuel Johnson in the bin there. Okay, election in Noah Webster says the act of choosing choice, the act of selecting one or more from others. And then it says in number three, choice, voluntary preference, free will, liberty to act or not. It is at his election to accept or refuse, the power of choosing or selecting. Now, it's interesting in the world of legal, they have this idea of power of attorney. But the attorneys only have that power because they've made basically their election sure by choosing to be a devil's advocate. So they've elected to choose the will of the devil. They advocate lies, fiction, untruth. They love deceit. They profit from it. They run their whole bar association on it. They control every avenue of society that you are surrounded with today. The seven mountains of influence, from religion to media to entertainment, government, schooling, everything is in there. Absolutely controlled by them. Actually, like the seven hills of Rome spoken of. And they've managed to put this figurative mountain range of control, of influence, everywhere. And there would be hard-pressed to find a continent that doesn't have lawyers. So when we look at this, we have basically choice, free will. It was a free will in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve had free will. It was free. God's will cost them nothing. They were in it. They were the beneficiaries to what he had given them as the earth, as their inheritance. And so they had free use of that earth, that gift. They had dominion over the creation other than dominion over themselves. They had not dominion over others. They were under the dominion of the creator, but they had dominion over the lower creation and the earth itself. So therefore, what happened? Why is it that you're paying to live right now? Could it be that you went under something else? You joined and left outside what God gave you? Is it possible you're using something that's contrary to free grace? When we look at legal, and we're going to go into Samuel Johnson's dictionary under election, going down that moment. So I'm just going to take you in there. Just bear with me. Election, it says the power of choice, the act of choosing choice. Okay, so basically it's saying it is a power. We were given the power, but what happens if we use the power to do something against what the power was to be used for? What happens if we went contrary? Okay, well, it's generally speaking, we only had two choices. We could have elected to serve God, or we elected to serve mammon. And of course, all the legal secular states of all the UN nations, they're all considered to be down a direction of monetary gain commerce. So if we are a member of them, it would make sense that we would bear a title of suretyship that would make us indebted to it as a debtor. Now, Christ eliminated that, according to Colossians 2, 13 to 15. But if I'm working contrary to God's will, well, then I've taken the wrong elective path. And so easy to look in for a moment, even how the government operates. There's been always the theories that the government itself appears these nations seem to be debtor nations, though they claim themselves to be sovereign, but are they not sovereign debtors? When you read the Mandel House record about what is going on there, this should really just sum it up. How many people are aware of the Mandel House Woodrow Wilson document? Well, this document in itself, at first I wondered whether or not it was real until I did some research. You need to do due diligence. And yes, it did occur in the archives of these memoirs that were between the president of the U.S., Woodrow Wilson, between his presidency of 1913 to 1921, in conversation with Colonel Edward Mandel House. And it says, very soon every American. Well, now you look at the word American. American shows up in Oxford's 20-volume set. And one of the, when you look up the word Gentile, it will show up under a definition for a Gentile. And it says that the term American is a Gentile terminology. And then it even gives us examples of other nationalities that people are familiar with. But American is a Gentile terminology. What is a Gentile? According to Samuel Johnson, 1755, one of an uncovenanted nation, one who knows not the true God. So anybody who deems himself to be an American has deemed themselves to be outside the covenant of God, and therefore they bear a legal Gentile name that says they're a debt or a debtor in that system. We can find that out by just going into Black's Law 4th under Nomen, because when we enter into a fictitious man who acts as a man person, that's about the best I can call it. It's a man acting in persona, a man person. Sometimes they call that a natural person, but that's just a naturally legally surnamed or birth surname person who is a debtor, who doesn't know who he is, and then bears the burden of that debtor name and walks around with it in ignorance, not knowing who he is. So it starts off in his memoir. It says, very soon every American will be required to register. That means enroll their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of the people and that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security. There's the security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. You can't get any fiat paper currency on average out of a bank without having a security instrument that allowed you into the bank in order to withdraw through an identity out of the bank. So it says, by such methodology, we compel the people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer being unable to work and earn a living. They will be our chattels, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading to us will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent, secured by their pledges. Welcome to a bankruptcy certificate. And you will not be able to solve it. You'll be bankrupt and insolvent, not knowing how to solve what Christ already solved when he canceled it. We give these out to people who do not know Jesus Christ. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans. And if by accident one or two should figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American contributor to this fraud, which we will call social insurance. Without realizing it, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly. The people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption, and we will employ the high office of our dummy corporation to foment this plot against America. Okay, so they plotted against those who don't know who they are and have not made their election sure. You could only pull this off due to lack of knowledge. So, of course, in the system in here, they give you the benefit of the doubt. They give you benefits for a doubtful title that's not yours, that you're willing to surety with no evidence it's yours. You just act upon it based on induced belief that you are the name that is on that security instrument. Even though you could not prove who you are, you would still need a government-issued security to actually act upon that. They're not taking your word for it. They're saying, as long as you're willing to basically imposter the identity on this security instrument with a fictitious name on it that is opposite to truth, then you're certainly deceived. As Edgar Allan Poe would say, it's like a dream within a dream. So you're just basically in the American dream. And of course, it would have to be a dream because it's not real. So therefore, everything to do with the monetary system is based on this delusion. And of course, what we've gone through already on the elective choice, how more impoverished could you be than bankrupt and insolvent? And wouldn't they need someone bankrupt and insolvent to act as a surety for that situation that does not have free grace in it? Because legal doesn't believe in free grace. It's based on the legalists who deny the Messiah. Jesus warned about them in Luke 11, 52, saying, "Woe unto you, lawyers, for they take away the key of knowledge." So they take away what has already been your purchased redemption, that you have been bought back to or brought back to the Garden of Eden without sin, as if Adam hadn't even committed the act. But they don't want you to know that. They need you to act as a legal debtor. So there isn't a single individual who believes in Jesus Christ who, when acting on anything to do with legal title, is not in a blasphemy situation. Because you absolutely are saying that free grace doesn't exist. And therefore, this is a terrible situation on the elective path journey. I hope I'm not trying to make this look doomsy. This is based on reality. In fact, all those who were deceived into this, when it first really started to come into being, the monarchies, those in control of what we would call legal construct, decided to bring in a book to register all landowners who thought when they bear legal title, it was theirs. And so they entered this book in England. They called it the Doomsday Book because the time was running out. And if they didn't know who they were going to be deceived. When you look down this, and I'm just going to go quickly over to this. I'm going to get the, sorry about this. I'm just finding the spot here from Blackstone. Two quotes. Blackstone. So God gave man dominion over the earth. So I kind of wonder, okay, did he give him a piece of paper? Did God give Adam a piece of paper and said, here's the deed? Now, would you need a deed to something that's real? Well, the artifice begins at that point on those who are going to deceive people. I remember talking to a man who had generations of what he considered his legal family background. He thought family was a good name too, or a good word, not realizing it meant from the highest master to the lowest servant or slave owned by the master under that master name. But he basically said, here's the document. He brought out this big document of what he considered to be, to an extent, looking like a letters patent. And of course, it showed one of his great-great-grandfathers on it. And it said the name that was on there. It said the name of what he knew his great-grandfather or ancestor to be. And he said, see, we've got the property. And I said, who signed the deed? And he looked at it and he saw the lawyers on it. I said, well, I guess the lawyers own the deed to that bad deed. I said, where did you see your ancestor on there with their signature? But they'll certainly allow you to come in and pay the tax on it. So back then it was pretty obvious of what was going to happen. We have a much more strict system now. Now they need picture ID for you to be this stupid to walk in and pay the tax on the property because they're only collecting from those who have lack of knowledge. When we look at Blackstone's commentary on this, he says, we think it enough that our title, this is legal title, is derived by the grant of the former proprietor, by descent from our ancestors, or by the last will and testament of the dying owner. Not caring to reflect that accurately and strictly speaking, there is no foundation in nature or in natural law why a set of words upon parchment should convey the dominion of land. Then why are we doing it? Is that deception? Or is that consensual stupidity? So we look further. Allodial Title came up on a site out of a real estate site of all things. I never usually found too many realtors with this knowledge because they're too busy brokering something when they don't realize they're broke with a BC, transferring it. And so they broker something that's already broken. Okay. And so anyways, in the stage play, of course, you got to break a leg to get on the stage. So you get the cast. And it goes on, it says, our ancestors, however, who migrated were farmers, not lawyers. Well, the original meaning of farmer is tax collector. Okay, so they had a number of tax collectors already coming over that were going to farm tax for the legal monarchies. The fictitious principle that all lands belong originally to the king, they were easily persuaded to believe real and accordingly took grants of their own lands from the crown, the legal crown, of course. And while the crown continued to grant for small sums and on reasonable rents, there was no inducement to arrest the error and lay it open to public view. Well, if you act on error, you're going to be in error. Truth plus error is always going to be error. So if we bear that in a name, you're not going to benefit from your own error. So despite someone saying you're going to capture the birth certificate and you're going to benefit from being in error, that's not going to happen because an error is not an error. Be careful. Only God can make an error. And so in the situation of legal, there is no solution being legal. It can't be there because it operates in fiction and error and lies and fraud, untruth, schemes, scams, and profiteering down a direction that is certainly not going to work for the benefit of those deceived. Now, when we look at scripture, and I take you to Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, it says, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Well, you can't buy salvation because you already have salvation. You were purchased. But we can work contrary to that by not basically making the proper elective choice. And so when you look at how the government operates, surprisingly, it appears all these nations are in debt and they all seem to issue birth certificates. I call them bankruptcy certificates to all the insolvents. And the only benefit of a legal monetary scamming creditor, Satan and his minion lawyers, could pull off to their benefit would be to have the subjects of all these legal nations have the opportunity to basically surety that debt by entering into another contract. So they took the government contract, which is certainly the issuer is the one who signed it. So this is the government's contract. It's their legal entity. It's not you. And then basically you decided to operate in their system with their creditors. So they enter you into a SIN program and they give you a new registration number that's going to benefit their creditors. When that's called, well, in Canada, we have the Canadian Ownership Determination and Control Act, which basically says that this is a Canadian owned entity. And if someone acts on it, well, they've got a male and female category at the back of the act, which with an annuity schedule paying out to investors. I would have to believe that it's probably a foreign investor who has a 9-digit number, because you don't get a social insurance name, you get a social insurance number. And I would have to believe that's probably a numbered account somewhere offshore that links to an account that someone else is benefiting from your lack of knowledge every time you push play, acting as a surety for that legal debtor title. But they would need your consent because basically slavery in a legal sense was outlawed, but not voluntary servitude. So you entered into voluntary servitude unknowingly. And it would never be your business to know what the debt was or what they basically bid on you, because that's a secret of the state. Why would I need to tell you about a legal title that you have no business knowing about? It's none of your business because it's unnatural, not real. We should go in for a moment here into the word natural in Black's Law 4th. Remember, you couldn't get any more not-for-profit than unnatural. There is no legal tender in nature, so you'd have to give people the ability to be deceived under this legal concept for it to work. So under natural in Black's Law 4th, it talks about the best way to explain this, and it says the juristic meaning of this term does not differ from the vernacular or the spoken, except in cases where it is used in opposition to the term legal. And then it means proceeding or determined by physical causes or conditions as distinguished from positive enactments of law or attributable to the nature of man rather than to the commands of law, or based upon moral rather than legal considerations or sanctions. And then it gets down into natural life, used in contradistinction to that juristic and artificial conception of life as an aggregate of legal rights or the possession of a legal personality, which could be terminated by civil death. Why do you think Jesus said that you would have to lose your life in order to gain it? Because he was talking to an audience that was under civil deception by a Roman Empire that had the belief that their Caesars were gods. And so they believed that these gods ruled over them, these Caesars, and therefore they would have been in the deception of that. Of course, you never saw any of these Caesars live to eternity or ever go beyond so many years, many of them even assassinated. So certainly the proof in the pudding would have been they were not gods. Because gods could not, a true God with the power that they were talking about could never be destroyed. So this deception went on through. And of course, when you have subjects who can't even see this, and they would burn incense worshiping the Caesars, burning incense to the gods. And the Romans, of course, believed that legal prosperity or profit was a sign that their legal mystic gods were happy with the Roman Empire. But of course, when truth hit the empire based on the event of Jesus Christ, there were people not deceived anymore and were coming out of that deceptive empire. And of course, at that point, it was almost like a declaring of war. The Caesars were called basically the savior of the common people of Rome. The Son of God, of course, was called savior of the world because he saved the world of those that were deceived, who were deceived into the world that Satan basically brought the first creation of God into. So it's interesting when you look at this as a perspective, you can see this war going on between good and evil. God said he would put enmity between the seed of the serpent, which would be those that were deceived into falsehood and follow him down a treasonous path into suicide, and those that would basically follow the remedy, which would be his son, which would eventually would crush the seed of the serpent in the head, a death blow, crushing out the overhead. If you no longer believe in debt, then I guess it would get rid of the overhead of corporate overhead, wouldn't it? Because it doesn't exist. There is no such thing. This is all a make-believe concept And I would have to believe that most that have been caught up in this, you know, participation of it have basically been led down the trail of deceit. So are we kind of gathering where this is going right now? Are we seeing the light of truth? Sometimes I wonder, you know, the concept is, you know, simple, true conception. We've been involved in a misconception of birth, and that led to a miscarriage of justice. So we ended up pleading guilty unknowingly to saying we deny the relief and the Messiah, and we're going to pay for our own sins. So I give you the security document for unlimited sin that you can go in surety and lead down this trail to nowhere, because it's just a broad road leading to destruction. And many are the ones that are going to find it. Narrow is the road leading to life, and few are the ones that will find it. So anyways, we're going to go back in for a moment just to review. You may not understand how interesting how not-for-profits operate. Someone asked me to kind of do a little bit of an expose at a gathering, just because I thought if people at least understood how even the government runs legal not-for-profits, they'd probably be in a better mindset of understanding where this is all going, what we've been doing through the four seminars. The best you can get in legal, in the world of the legalists, is they have a tax-free person. That's called a public trust not-for-profit. Public trust not-for-profits are a tax-free person because they have no share capital. They don't have anything they can claim to be theirs. They're literally granted an existence by the state as a creature of the state to look after and try to help the public interest, the tax interest. So in order to be a tax-free person, they are able to go after those who profit in the world. And they're like the Robin Hoods that go in there and take from those that are stealing and pillaging and not paying tax, and they bring it back into a public coffer. And therefore, they're able to use this, supposedly, at least it's supposed to go this way, for the greater good. So you'll see food banks, you'll see, I shouldn't even use the dirty word hospital, but hospitals and things of that nature. And of course, religion operates under this. And so they basically take the profit money, they're able to use it tax-free, and they're able to basically use that money as a tax-free person to help where there seems to be problems occurring in the public. Now, when we went through the explanation of what the word job meant, which was official public business for private dishonest gain, and then we realized that if we have a private God-given name and it's claiming to be known or requesting to be known with a legal public surname, wouldn't that be private use of public title for gain? Is that not the game that's being played? So therefore, what happens, the government runs many ways to get the money back into the coffer. So they have numerous charities, and they will actually run lotteries under foundations and charities, because people would prefer to gamble it away than declare the money. So they'll throw it away in a gambling lottery. Most, of course, will lose. We know the odds are in favor of the house name. And so basically the house wins, but most lose and a very few amount win. And so they make a huge amount of collecting back in the money back into the public coffer through lotteries in Canada. The tax is very heavily put on the pumps, things like cigarettes, alcohol, things like that, because they can't get it any other way because people won't declare it. So they basically tax those things, and then they get it back into the community chest, so to speak. Now, whether or not the community chest is not being infiltrated by the bankers, that's another discussion in itself. But overall, the system you're operating in is operating in this, in these two conflicting realms. So the government basically uses not-for-profit organizations just to put out some of the fires that the greed of legal contract activity causes. So it's literally communism in the long run, legal communism, because you're not supposed to have anything. And that's why poverty is generally the only level that's not taxable. So you'd have to be impoverished. So wouldn't that be any, is it really any different than the feudal system? The feudal system basically had the rich and the poor. Where did this middle class come from? All of a sudden we got this middle class coming in and they're decided that they don't want to be poor and they're going to borrow to play rich. Correct? Hands for that being the correct assessment of what's out there under the middle class. And if someone knocks on your door, okay, and says, hey, would you like to borrow $450,000 you don't have? Shouldn't you be a little concerned why they'd want you to do that? And how the heck are they lending that out? Could they really know that you're basically going to have $450,000? Or is it just basically to control you as a debtor? You're going to be really occupied being a debtor when you don't have $450,000 and they've got a schematic of how long it's going to take for you to get it back. In fact, they call it a mortgage, which is a dead pledge. And you get a life sentence of 25 years to pay it back on average due to your lack of knowledge, because you're borrowing on a name that's not yours, which is the only way this could work, because you couldn't borrow on a name that's yours, because if it was yours, well, in the sense of that you were gifted this by God, your God-given name is a graced gift. Well, that's purchased property. So God owns you and you're trying to claim ownership into a legal title that is actually controlled by the ones who instituted that legal title, instituted for the purposes of taxation, the census, and the draft. Did God institute a name for taxation, the census, of the draft? Did he come up with that legal construct? Or is it truth will make you free? Well, we have to really start to take a decision-making situation on this. When we don't even know that we're in what I've just explained, all the nations are debtor nations. So sovereignty is of no discussion. When a nation is borrowing money, they're not sovereign. That is a complete hogwash. How could a nation that can print its own money be in debt? So they're certainly not printing their own money. They're printing it under someone else's construct and they're borrowing it. So we'd have to believe that they would, if they're borrowing money, they're debtors. So these are all debtor nations and they belong in this big unified debtor conglomerate. They issue legal certificates of debt to all the debtor subjects. Maybe it is that maybe the legal monarchs, when they were looking at the money when they were building the colonies, had borrowed from some wealthy individuals who had accumulated quite a bit of prosperity in the world, in power. And they said, you know what? Tell you what, we don't need you to pay back the money that you borrowed from us. Just give us all your legal dummies. Just get them to basically sign an agreement with us, so that they will take the security instrument and identify themselves under another enrollment number that we can collect on. And make sure they put that on all their bank accounts when they open them up, so we have direct access. We'll even give them visas as foreigners, so we can collect that foreign debt off them. We'll bring them to courts. They'll show up with the name that appears on the security instrument, and they'll plead guilty or they'll try to fight us, but we'll always win because the house always wins. They will be our subjects, they will be our debtors, and we'll hold the security over them forever. They'll look like they have no redemption because they don't see free grace. They are basically deemed to be a legal debtor until redeemed otherwise. So the journey on this, and if I can just find my glasses, I set them down here. That's really bad. What did I do with my glasses underneath all this? We could have a station identification problem here if I don't find them. Okay. What did I do with them?
They're hooked on your shirt.
No, they're not. That is bizarre. Well, you can tell this is a live recording.
Yeah, I'll just pause you.
Okay. Okay, so wouldn't it make sense that people who are broke would go through brokers? How can you have brokers? What are they doing? They're brokering debt. Insolvent, in debt, a bankruptcy certificate, something opposite to free grace. It would have to be the opposite. You're a debtor. So all we're doing is moving around and exchanging debt. We call that the bills of exchange. We just exchange one debt for another, and we just transfer the debt into another debtor name. So Taylor with the last name, John using Taylor, he basically takes on the debt under Taylor, and he may have gone out there and done some type of transaction with David Smith. And then they just exchange and they just transfer the debt into the next debtor name. That's all they do is exchange and transfer the debt. It never gets discharged. It never gets eliminated. It just keeps on going up. Now, if you're not in control of the name that you're using, well, then you couldn't discharge the debt because you'd be assuming it was your title, that you had authority. And this is where people get really upset because they actually believe they're controlling the name. Okay, people even said, I'm going to copyright it. I said, oh, that's an interesting one. I said, well, if you're you, go there and try to enter into any part of the legal contract system of the legal matrix and not use a government issued ID. Go into a bank, and has anybody ever tried going to a bank and just say, hi, my name is David. My name is Dan. I'd like to open a bank account here today. I say, well, we have to let you know, Dan, that you're going to need a government issued security ID. Because we can't believe who you are. We'll tell you who you are when we see the security instrument. And then we just need you to give us a picture ID on top of that, where we've got now your consent and we've captured your image so we know how to find you if we're looking for the debtor. But you're not feeling very intelligent now. But that's how the system operates. And you've been conditioned by this. It's all Rita's fault anyways, because she's the one teaching. Sorry, poor Rita. She's going to get me back later. But anyways, this is actually, to an extent, the imprinting that's happened through all of us having been involved in institutionalized education. We are all taught this. There's no one to blame. The teachers, I would even say most of the lawyers that I've met, they don't know anything that I'm talking about. They literally don't know. It's like a deer in the headlights look. Now, I would have to say the government lawyers are in a different category. Okay, that's a little bit more of the cream of the crop of thieves. Okay, they're at the top end of thieving. And they advise the legal governments in the criminal ring of deceit. But the problem is the people are part of the problem. And if they don't come to awareness who their maker is and where their loyalty is supposed to be, then they're going to lose their life in this, because it appears that things are not looking good in the legal realm. And so this is a life or death decision we're on here right now. We don't want people taking this as some novelty. We just get together, sit around and, hold hands and talk about how bad it is. It is going to require action, but action in a peaceful manner, and also having the knowledge from God on where we're going to go with this. Because if we are going to escape this, which happens in the fourth session, we're going to come out of this. Well, then we're going to have to do something that's pretty obviously contrary to what we've been doing. Would we agree on that? It would have to be something opposite to what we're doing at this moment. Raise hands on that. Would it be the same as what we're doing? It's just maybe we, I was talking with someone and I understood where he was coming from. He was trying to turn every stone over and ask me, isn't there any back door to this? There's got to be some way I can still have the driver's license, or I can still have this, or I can still have that, but it's got to be a little different. Maybe they're going to give me some specialized version of it. And I said, why would they give you that? They've already got you. Why would they give you that? It'd have to be something that you'd have to come to awareness of. And when we come to awareness, which is what we're going to lead to in the fourth session, it's leading to the escape out. And the escape out is knowledge of God, which is leading to the word conscience. So if you at all are feeling confident in the legal world you're surrounded with. Okay. The fact of what you've seen over the last several years with what went on, the crown virus, the coronavirus. Well, it was the crown virus because we didn't know who truly holds the crown. If we were under the legal crowns, well, then we didn't know who our creator is. And we don't know about his anointed son, so we don't know who holds the superior crown. This is a very, very difficult journey for the average, I'd say we're going to call them persons now, the average persona out there, because they don't even know they're wearing a mask, and they don't even realize they're wearing something that would label them for death. It's actually a target to those who enforce. Most don't even realize that the whole purpose of the birth registration system under the vital statistics is for the purpose of law enforcement. It's based on that type of aggressive system of armed force. People who don't know who they are going to make bad, immoral decisions. They're going to act in a manner that needs a dog collar. So they decided that this would be the way to control those with lack of knowledge. So it's, this is a journey. There's no doubt about it. And what we're going to be getting more stronger in the next session, in the fourth session, about the escape, you know, is really just the culmination of everything that you've learned from the beginning. And then it's putting you into a position that you have to make what? An elective choice. And then at that point, when you make the elective choice, this is going to be something that would have to be done in a proper format, because you have basically been pursued there. The world that you're surrounded with is continuously trying to court and date you. But you can't be courted and dated in reality because you're already spoken for by the creator, not by this fictitious system. This is just a deceptive, soul-stealing spirit, deceptive system that has got into you to put your time and energy into a legal dummy. And we'll be talking about that. But, you know, an interesting word that when we're talking about a dummy, does anybody want to make a comment on what a dummy would be? When we say something represents what looks like a man or a woman, what would we call that? What is generally something we'll even see it in department stores?
Well, dummy is one who holds legal title for another.
Right. And when we're going to a department store and we see a dummy inside the department store window, we call that a mannequin.
Akin to what?
Well, you'll find out when you really research deep into the etymology of that word, it leads literally to a man person. Okay? It's just a fake artificial.
Dominus homo, man with no means.
It's not real. So it's no different than the mannequin in the window. The only difference with the mannequin in the window and how you're operating right now is you're actually symbolically speaking through that mannequin and making
it. And the mannequin actually has an excuse for its stupidity because it doesn't happen.
So, and that's how you know, when they dress the window, right? They dress it up, they cover up the mannequin. You generally don't see mannequins in the window naked, right? They're always covering them up. So they need to do the same thing. They need address and they need a post where to reach you so they can impost you and basically continue to chase you for a debt that's not yours only because of your lack of knowledge. Now, you can imagine this is not popular in the world of commerce. So this is probably not a economic meeting about trying to attain wealth, is it? Yeah, this is about the wealth of spiritual knowledge. You can't eat gold, you can't eat silver, okay? Yes, you could temporarily exchange it for that, but if you relied on only gold and silver and you had no ability to know how to keep yourself warm or feed yourself, we've kind of spent time down a lot of waste of energy and hours to do things that are not very practical. They're not there in any manner that would, save us for a moment in a disaster. So the majority of the population are sitting ducks, because all they'd have to do is pull the plug on the artificial electrical system, and you would just have to let nature take its course after 6 weeks. You don't have to drop a nuclear bomb. You don't have to do anything. Just pull the plug. And I think that they feel it's better just to pull the plug on the banking and basically call it a crisis and say, maybe it's time for us to round up the herd so we don't have any more of wondering what they're doing with the title. We'll put the person, the legal person, in their body. It would be the best safekeeping they could do. The best banking that legal fraudsters could do would be to put their legal person in you. And then you'll be a chip off the old block at that point, or the old block label chain that's coming. Okay. So it's not really a physical chain. It's now basically just a debtor's chain. And it's around basically all the population that is participating in the legal persona game. So we're pretty much within 10 minutes of this right now. The end. I'm going to be, being a little bit more direct on what's going to happen, what you would need to do. But certainly writing and notices and things like that, they're all great. But you have to be prepared that this is something that's so important that this would have to be, as all divorces end up in a court of law, you're about to divorce your legal interest with the state. And that's a very, very important decision. Most people think that if that happens, that somehow they're going to be living out of a paper bag, or they're going to basically be out on the street. But that's not really accurate. We have to look at it that equity, is an interesting word, but natural equity is where we're going next week. And natural equity should not be confused with legal equity. And we basically have to do a soul searching. Do you basically have enough faith in God that you would put truth over falsehood in order to overcome and get to the other side? Or are you going to remain in a fear factor? And I'll be sharing some things in, other off sessions that'll be dealing with this. So those that are coming on after, I don't know how many will be coming on that after one at 9, but we'll go over that briefly and where this is all going. I'm just trying to juggle a little bit of time here to let you know that sometimes it's difficult for me to expedite things faster than the speed of light. When I went first down this journey, I just want to let you know that I was content enough to figure out what I would do. I knew it was so morally wrong what I knew I had discovered that I would rather just have unplugged, sent back all the ID to the state and said goodbye. Now, most wouldn't do that and most wouldn't know how to do that. But I had some survival skills on that. And I knew a lot about how their system operated when I went about doing that. So I knew where my foot was going at that time. But this is a clear evidence that what I learned during that journey was for a greater purpose, to know how to end it finally and how to literally separate, be ye separate, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. And so this is a direct severance from any legal interest. This is where this is going. And you have to be certain, are you prepared for that? Do you even comprehend it? Or are we just talking about something in theory? Do you realize what legal is now and what is truthful, natural, spiritual from God? Have you learned that through the sessions? And what's great about all the other sessions that we've had, they're recorded. So there's a wealth of recordings there that can educate you on that. And bring you to a greater knowledge. Every session we do a little differently, but I'm trying to at least let you understand that the system kind of mirrors what could be. But the ultimate goal of legalists is you would have nothing anyways. Your ultimate goal, you live in poverty, you would own nothing, and they could just pull the plug from you at any given moment if you get in the way. This has happened with the wealthiest, even to the poorest individual out there. They've had the rug pulled at times while they're operating legal. So not for profit, why we brought that up today, you know, basically the closest you could get to not for profit comprehension is basically the Matthew 6:24, you cannot serve God and mammon. So in the legal construct, they direct or mandate that the directors of a not-for-profit organization, which are in registration under the name they use, tax-free for that moment. It's a tax-free public entity, but it owns nothing. The state just allows them to exist and walk around with no taxes because the state ultimately owns the public creature of the state, as they do with the last name, how it's controlled. So when basically directors who file these or put these not-for-profits in place go in there, they are operating with a private name with a public last name. And of course, the warning is on to them, do not take any payrolls. No pecuniary gain for the directors because they know that they will thieve if they have the opportunity. So And you'll see that. I mean, there are a lot of large not-for-profit, even churches, and they'll have some of their ministers driving around in, you know, $200,000 cars and living in $3 million and $4 million estates that are owned by the church. And they will even take payrolls, sometimes of over $1 million a year, and have to return $500,000 of that to the government. All wasted when it was, should have been used, actually, at least in semblance to what they said they were representing. But unfortunately, these are professional fraudsters and they're out there. And whether the preacher of the state church is small to large, they all use the same construct. Just some are better at the fraud than others in attaining the wealth that they rob out of that. But they're doing nothing more different, any different than how the legal construct works anyways, because you do not have any legal title. So the best that they could have out there is a not-for-profit person, because you don't own anything anyways. And the legal construct that's used for public is not to be for your private gain. So they basically penalize private gain, which would tell you then they're not there for private gain, but they let you play and pretend and try to come up with schemes and scams and hiding it. But in essence, you wouldn't be hiding something if it was yours. Why are people hiding money? Well, it must be because they believe that it's not theirs, or they're worried about someone taking it. But there's always this energy behind it that it appears to be something that belongs to another, and you've really thieved it, as was the theme of the legal system and legalism that goes back to China, where the whole theme of legalism was based on the theme that the people are to be treated as thieves. And so therefore, the legal construct is always this idea of larceny or theft, that you're always hiding something or not paying your due to the one who controls the legal title that you bear. So they will continue to lord over those who don't know who they are and don't know who their maker is. And so it's time to choose sides. And you can't be on both. You cannot be on God's side and be on the legal side of the secular nations, because according to scripture, these nations are going to be destroyed by the hand of God's Son, who is coming in to take down that beast of Revelation, that unholy government of men's making that has created nothing more than a mess through its leader, which is Satan. So we hope that we're educating you down a direction that's leading you down the truth of spiritual, but do not put your faith in men. Scripture says that we are supposed to have our faith in the Creator, not in men. We were never told to put our trust in it, so we shouldn't be disappointed when we see what goes on with legal governments. So anyways, I'm going to let everybody go, and we'll see you next week, or we'll see you on the after and session of those that are on that. And God bless everybody, and thank you for letting me share.
All right, Dan, thank you for putting the energy in for this session tonight. Let everyone give you a response there, as they have been throughout, which is really good. I'm glad everyone's given a reaction there. So at least Daniel knows you're alive. You know, for those who haven't put up anything reaction, do it now. Do it now. And anyway, thank you again, and I'll wish you a good evening, and we'll see you again soon.
Okay, peace.